John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, Maura Dooley teased this, and we'll get to Sean Salisbury here in a second, but Dee Gordon goes on the disabled list. Looks like he's got a broken bone in his toe, which, of course, has been bothering him for, I guess, probably about a week or so. Dan Vogelbach has been brought up from the minors. All of a sudden, this team is now down two all-star first basemen because Robinson Cano is on the 80-day suspension list. Now Dee Gordon goes on the 10-day disabled list. And, Maura, before we get to Sean, any early word from Shannon Dreher, the amount of time it's going to take for him to come back?
No, she said he is on the trip. They should learn more about the severity and return time later today. He originally injured it May 9th, fouling a ball off his foot against the Blue Jays. He only missed one game, but has been a bit hobbled since. In the 10 games since the injury, he's hit 175 with just two extra base hits, and his batting average dropped from 340 to 304 in that stretch.
Okay, so that's the bad news for the Mariners, but the good news is we're joined on the Venue Kings hotline by Sean Salisbury. And so, Sean, I'm here in Buckhead, Georgia at the owners' meeting, and of course, just anxiously awaiting the word from the Carolina Panthers that it's going to be sold to David Tepper, who is a $11 billion hedge fund guy. But I don't know, what's your overall view, Sean, of the Carolina Panthers as a franchise?
It's obviously needed a bit of a, judging from what we read and hear, and that they needed a little bit of a cultural change, and apparently, and from top to bottom in the offices, that it was important and it was time. And that's from a distance. I'm not in there. Ron Rivera, I've known forever. Now I'm the guy North Turner who coached me. I think they've got the makings. Obviously, it's a great football area. And they've got a really, really sound football team that 2 years ago was a step away from, winning the thing. So I think this is a good move. I have a lot of respect for the people before, but sometimes all good things got to come to an end. And if there's some things that aren't so good, that needs to come to an end as well. And I think this change will be good. Keep it there and let's get it going on, and let's make sure people in the offices, on the sideline, in the training room and on the football field and in the locker room are comfortable and feel good about it, and that they can move forward and do what a franchise is supposed to do and make sure there's peace and happiness and you win. And I think they've got the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm. No, and of course, I mean, the big thing with them is that they got Cam Newton, and I think that as we just talked to David Newton, beat writer for the ESPN.com covering the Panthers, and they were like Dallas. They had no separation at wide receiver. They had no speed at the receiver position. And so now all of a sudden they've gone ahead. They've got a little bit quicker and probably a little bit more viable, taking DJ Moore in the draft, being able to, pick up some people and pieces and trades and all that stuff. I think that could be better right now for Cam.
Yeah, and I think it's important. And now with North Turner there, and you know this about him, John, when Norv is on in a system and feels right, has a quarterback and a big play guy, then when he's got a running back as well, he'll make sure that running back he's used to his fullest and the most efficiency. When Norv's been at his best as a head coach and coordinator anywhere, they run the football. They run play action, and they get the ball out of their hand quickly. And I think it'll suit Cam well, and it'll also suit, having McCaffrey there and having DJ Moore. This will be a better team. Greg Olsen, obviously. I think this team will be obviously better than they were last year and more efficient. Cam's always going to be explosive, but efficiency is the key. Mike Shula was good. I think North Turner's better. I think this is an upgrade, and I think this football team will be more efficient.
And they were pretty good last year. I mean, you're talking about a NFC South that had three playoff teams, and now Tampa Bay looking like they may be better. That division is really tough.
Yeah, it's extremely tough. Great quarterback division, and that's what I mean. This is a team that was good and took a step back, got better last year, and I still think they can take another step, even though they made the playoffs. That's not good enough for them. This is a team that thinks they're a Super Bowl team, or they wouldn't have made a coaching change if they said, well, we're a step away. And I don't think it's necessarily a too big a knock on Mike Shula. I think it's more of Ron Rivera's comfortability with North Turner. So I think that the pieces are there to step up, but you better be able to score points and you better be able to defend quarterbacks, because I can't fathom that Jameis Winston and Tampa won't somehow improve offensively a little bit and as a football team and rushing the passer. Can't be much worse than they were last year. So this is a hell of a quarterback division, and you got to be really good to win the division, let alone make the playoffs.
Well, let's score some points with four downs.
All right, gentlemen, I know we are only in the voluntary part, but how concerned should the Patriots be that Tom Brady is not participating in OTAs for the first time in his career?
I'm not worried about it. I think he's got enough. I always would laugh in Dallas when Tony Romo would play golf in February or March, and then he'd throw an interception in October, and everybody blame because he played golf, 18 holes of golf in March, that's why he threw a pick in October. It's absurd. I think Tom Brady knows how to get himself ready. If his preparation or focus was a problem in the past, I could see how we question this. This dude's he's a 40-year-old MVP of the league. I think he knows how to get ready. And just because he's not there, this has been a strange offseason for the Patriots. There's guys I'd worry about attitudinal. There's guys I'd worry about would they physically and mentally and emotionally be ready. And Brady may be a little pissed off. That's okay. He plays pretty darn good when he's pissed off. And this team functions when there's a little bit of when they get comfortable being uncomfortable. I think they kind of like it. So for Brady, maybe the legs need it. He doesn't need to be there. There are certain things that we make too big a deal in the media and say, oh my gosh, a guy didn't show up. This isn't me because I'd need to be there because I'd need the work. This is Tom Brady. I'm not concerned at all. Matter of fact, the backup needs work. Let him get the work. Brady doesn't need it.
Well, my big thing is it's going to have a little bit of effect, but I agree with you. You can't overdo this, and you can't overreact to it. All I know is that in 2016, Tom Brady was on a suspension for 4 games. He spent those 4 weeks or so over on a beach someplace. I don't know if it was in Spain or someplace like that, and just relaxing. He came over and took the team to the Super Bowl and won. I was with the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. So it's like, hey, you have a fresh Tom Brady, which is probably good. My big concern is that you're basically just wasting this OTA period if he's not going to be there. I mean, are the guys going to really get tuned up with Brian Hoyer in there, trying to get things done? They have basically a seventh round quarterback who's replacing, Jimmy Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett. Is it in the big picture? It's almost like when you're listening to the problems that the Patriots are having during the season. Hey, Brady was still having the MVP type of year. Bill Belichick still being one of the greatest coaches ever, and they went to the Super Bowl. But I think that you can see, as Seth Wickersham put out, that there are some issues, and it's got to carry through. You maybe can't overrate the issues, but I do think this will have some impact because they're not getting the full benefit of the OTA when Tom Brady is sitting there doing the TB12 program.
All right, Sean, I think you know the professor well enough to know how he feels about this, but I'm a little bit excited to see the Browns on Hard Knocks, to see behind this kind of perplexing franchise over the last few years. How do you feel about the Browns being on Hard Knocks?
Well, I'm with you for the first time ever, but on this subject, I'm with, because I don't watch Hard Knocks. I have not watched in all my years, and maybe it's because, John, I mean, people have been covering it for so long, or I haven't played and been in a locker room. I watch clips of it. Somebody comes back and says, did you hear what so-and-so said 3 years ago on Hard Knocks? I may watch that clip of it. But I have never sat down, and I don't wear it as a badge of honor. I just don't, and watched Hard Knocks from the start of the show till the end of it. I never have. I haven't seen 20 minutes of Hard Knocks since they started doing it. I'll listen to people. But this year, I don't know why. Maybe it's Baker Mayfield. Maybe it's because they're a team coming off 0-16. I look at the people, Josh Gordon. I look at the people they went out and got, Chuck Landry, this offseason, that I think there is some intrigue. Now, I'm not going to set my clock by it or my alarm by it, but if it's on, I might tune in to see the Baker Mayfield show and see the Hugh Jackson and how they're getting after it and a new GM. I'm not big into it. I usually don't follow. But, John, this year I may watch a few minutes of it, but I've never watched a full show, let alone 20 minutes of Hard Knocks, since it's come on.
Yeah, I think I'm only going to watch the Baker Mayfield part of it. Hey, there's still a team that's won 1 game in 2 years, and it's like I like it better when the teams are closer to the playoffs. This team isn't close to the playoffs. It'll be interesting, but I'll probably take the tack that you've taken for several years. I'll listen to what people say and watch a little bit.
Johnny Manziel signed a 2-year contract with the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the Canadian Football League on Saturday. Does he have any chance of making it back to the NFL at this point?
He does, but I got to tell you, I haven't been a guy who did it for different reasons than him. is if you've got both feet in and your whole body's into it, your whole mind, everything's into being a great CFL quarterback, that's how he gets back. If he's going up there to touch, try and convince people, see, I care, and it's kind of a showmanship thing, you know, he'll be average there, which means nobody will want him back here. But if he takes it serious and focuses on three, you know, it's three downs and a bigger field and proves that he can be successful there, somebody will give him a shot back here. So I think it's wise. I think it shows that he, at least on the surface, loves football, and it's going to give him a chance to dedicate himself more and prove to June Jones, his quarterback, I mean, his coach, that he can, that he's committed to it, because June's had a nice reputation in the league and people will ask him. So I think it's great, but if you're not committed there, nobody's going to count on you back here. So he's got to go all in and be the best CFL quarterback on the planet and play great so somebody gives him a chance back here. If it's just a PR move, it's going to work and he'll never get another shot.
What I like is that they have him now as second string. He's not a, he's not given the job because there's an Oregon quarterback there that right now is running first string and isn't that bad. So I think, you know, he has to earn it. If he does earn it, he's got 2 years to reprove himself, and then he might have a chance. But we'll see how he does. Let's see how he does with Hamilton first.
The Falcons already saw a significant offensive drop-off in Steve Sarkisian's first year as offensive coordinator, and now they have Julio Jones looking for a new deal after paying Matt Ryan premium price. Are the Falcons in trouble?
I'm looking at the opposite. I think the Falcons, I think the second year, which, I mean, this year with Sarkisian, they'll be better. I think that Matt Ryan, you know, is the peace and content that he'll have with this new deal. He's got to protect the ball more in the red zone, but Julio Jones, I'd pay him. There's certain guys, pay him. Give him what he wants. If he's not the first best receiver in the league, he's not the third best. He's one of the top two guys in this league in his position. Pay him. Let's get this thing peaceful. I think they upgraded this offseason. I think they're close. Heck, they were a playoff team last year. This is a team that if they'll be better in the red zone and you continue to give Matt Ryan weapons and make their players happy. And I'm not one for kissing the rear end of a player, but Julio Jones has proven he's a superstar. I'd pay him. I don't think they're in trouble at all. I think Sarkisian will be better. I think Matt Ryan will be better. And I think that the Atlanta Falcons are a definite threat in the NFC.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, because, again, Matt Ryan's one of the better quarterbacks in the league, and I think that Dan Quinn's done a great job with that team. And, hey, they're a Super Bowl contender. The problem that they face, it is a very difficult division because each team has a good quarterback or a great quarterback, and that's going to be the challenge. But, again, three teams, including the Falcons, came out and made the playoffs from the NFC South. We'll see if Tampa Bay joins in there. But, no, I think they will be better on offense. And, of course, bring the offense to four downs. Sean Salisbury, thanks for joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks so much.
Talk to you later in the week. And, of course, looks like the approval of David Tepper has just happened, a big scramble to get into the media room and get into the press conference room. So it looks like Tepper did get approved. I'm sure it was almost unanimous. We'll get to that vote and find out what happened. And, again, repeating the news earlier, D. Gordon goes on the disabled list, a 10-day disabled list, with a fractured toe that he suffered on May the 9th. Dan Vogelbach being brought up from the minors. And so that was the move for the Mariners, another big, devastating type of injury, and all of a sudden their second baseman is out of there. Hey, we'll come back and we will get out the grade book. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton,
live from the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Boy, a lot of stuff going on. I just went over and listened to David Tepper getting into it as the owner of the Carolina Panthers. He was approved. He's having his press conference, and so he is now the owner of the Carolina Panthers. And joining us is Brent Secker. Brent Secker from 710sports.com. And as far as big news is D. Gordon going on the disabled list with a fractured toe, Dan Vogelbach being brought up from the minors. And this is another major blow for this team. And so who's going to play second base?
Well, it looks like right now their two options are Andrew Romine and Gordon Beckham, who are a couple of utility infielders they've had on the bench. They brought up Beckham when Cano first was injured, and they made the decision to go to D. Gordon after Cano was suspended. So now they have to kind of go back to what the first plan was, and that's Gordon Beckham probably first, Andrew Romine second.
And, of course, the other problem is now, you know, they had to fill the number three hole with Robinson Cano. I'm sure they can take Gene Segura and put him in the leadoff, but, boy, does that take away so much because, you know, with that transition that they had without Cano and then for a couple of days without Nelson Cruz at 3 and 4, that was a little bit of a struggle. And now that top of the lineup was really big in being able to get through the Detroit series and get the wins on the at home. But now this now makes it so much different with D. Gordon and his speed being taken out of the lineup.
Yeah, the offense is really looking different than what it did, you know, about a week ago. I wonder if because of just the way that Segura has been playing, he's kind of put the team on his back. If they could put him at leadoff, or they could have him hit third, or they could have him still hit second, maybe put Ben Gamble in the first spot. But Haniger's hitting well. The question now is how Cruz is doing. Cruz has been out for a little bit. You know, first he got hit in the foot, then he got hit in the elbow. And I imagine that's why they went to Vogelbach, called him up from AAA's, because if Cruz is still hurt, they can put Vogelbach at DH for a little bit while Cruz gets healthy.
Boy, it seems like now this year that where all the injuries were to the pitchers last year, now there's more injuries to the position players. Fortunately, this team is deep enough to be able to handle it. But at some point, it's going to catch up.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, when you lose a guy like Robinson Cano, you can maybe get through it for like a week or so. But if you're going out there and you don't have D. Gordon, you know, on base to get driven in by guys, you're relying on guys like Daniel Vogelbach and Kyle Seager, who's still kind of scuffling to lead the team. You have to wonder at what point is it just too much.
Well, it sounds like the Seahawks to a certain degree, where you take away five Pro Bowl guys who have been on defense or at least have been to the Pro Bowl. Now you're taking away all-stars at second base, you know, or two second basemen, Nelson Cruz, you know, with his injuries. I mean, these all-stars, you start knocking them down. This is not good. Brett Steckers, thanks for joining us here and give us an update on what's going on with D. Gordon and how they're going to try to adjust to it.
All right. Thanks, John.
Okay, let's go quickly. I know we're a little bit late into this, but let's see if we can get out the grades books and kind of grade on the report card.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
All right, professor, we're probably only going to have time to get to maybe one of these today, but I wanted your take on this. I heard Cliff Averill on NFL Network yesterday. And he was talking to Michael Robinson, also a former Seahawk, and he said that Russell Wilson was going to have to do even more. But Michael Robinson was kind of questioning, how can he do more than he already did last year? So we'll take a listen to that.
But you know, to lead them. But they're going to have to ask a lot more from Russ in order for them to find out what they're going to do. But as far as for the defense, I think they're going to have to be the backbone of this whole thing.
Cliff, you say they're going to ask more of Russ?
How can Russ give any more?
That's what I'm saying. Almost 82% of the offense.
He's going to have to do something.
Coming from one position, I don't know the identity. I mean, I know Cliff, I know when I played with you guys, the identity was tough defense and run the football. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's still that identity. I mean, you look at, they had 9 draft picks with one offensive lineman drafted, Jamarco Jones out of Ohio State. Russell's averaged 41 sacks each season he's been in the National Football League. So you would think that they would draft more offensive linemen. But I tell you one thing, the identity of this team is going to be Russell Wilson. That's the reason why they paid him. He's the franchise quarterback. And he can do so much. He can throw out of the pocket. He obviously can do what you see him doing there, running the football. But they have to take some of the hits off Russell.
Yes. Yeah, it's an A for Mike Robb because, again, he identifies the fact you can't ask more than 82% of the offense and all but one touchdown that he's involved with. I mean, they've got to make it easier for him. And, Cliff, I think you have to kind of give him a C because, you know, to think that you can ask for more than 82%, that's just not the case. I think we have time to squeeze in one more on the report card.
All right, Professor. Well, this is a... a rather interesting story. You know that Serena Williams is good on the tennis court, but apparently she's not bad at beer pong either. There were
really?
Beer pong tables set up at the royal wedding, which she attended this weekend, to mark the bride's U.S. heritage. And Serena Williams apparently swept it. She took down everyone.
She's amazing. She's absolutely amazing. I give her an A, and I give the what is. Am I correct in saying that they're having some difficulty with Wimbledon kind of giving her where she should be as far as her ranking or something like that? I have to give them an F. I mean, she is the absolute most. I mean, she is the LeBron James of women's tennis. I mean, she is just so good, and now she can carry it over to beer pong. Hey, way to go, Serena. Way to do this. I mean, she is absolutely one of the most remarkable athletes I have ever seen. A. In fact, I upgraded to an A+. And that's a report card. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will take your text questions at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Boy, a lot going on in two different places. Of course, the Mariners are down in Oakland, and they've officially put Dee Gordon on the disabled list for 10 days with that fractured big toe that he's been kind of fighting all over for the last couple weeks. He hurt it on May the 9th, still paying a little bit of the consequences, so now he's going to be out for at least 10 days. Daniel Vogelbach coming up from the minor leagues, and then, of course, in the National Football League here at the owners' meeting in Atlanta, David Tepper has been approved as the owner of the Carolina Panthers. Just had his press conference. I was over there listening to him. He's pretty funny. I mean, again, you know, he was a Stanton Heights guy. I'm a Braddock guy, so he came from a, you know, little bit of an upgrade as far as just not the area, but just the fact that a little bit more money in Stanton Heights than there was in Braddock, PA, but made a pretty good shot at Ian Rappaport, kind of saying, you know, is that hair colored or is that a real hair and all that stuff. Got kind of a laugh out of that when he's going to Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network. But the big thing is he's not moving the team. You know, he was saying that, you know, he's got to try to make sure that it's the Carolina Panthers, and that's not going to change. We are taking your text questions at 710-710. So, Maura, what do we have?
First up, the 360 wants to know, what are the chances of, I think it's Jordan Mailata, the Australian rugby player, of making the Eagles?
Doubtful, because I think that it's going to be a long shot. I mean, you know, it's funny because it seems like there's a couple, maybe three rugby players a year getting the opportunity to at least get in there and you know, try to make teams. New England's usually the team that does it the most, trying to take rugby players, but I think that, you know, that roster is deep enough that that's probably not going to happen. Hey, by the way, Maura, here is the quote that David Tepper has to Ian Rappaport. Do you color that hair, or is that your real haircut? And of course, Ian kind of brought back that. Well, yeah, but of course, Ian brought back, it's like, you know, David Tepper is follically challenged because he's bald.
Oh, no. Things are getting ugly out there, Professor.
It's a tough league. It's a National Football League. I'm doing a show, so I can't really get involved.
Let's see here. The 253.
I got in enough trouble. I was listening to Tepper, and it's like, I think I got to get back for the show, so I probably played two spots too many. So sorry about that.
It's okay. We'll wait for you always. The 253 says, if the Panthers did move, where would be the best city for them to move?
I mean, you know, from the league standpoint, they would love London, but they weren't going to move. There's too much money in the Charlotte area, because remember, that's a big banking community. There's too many good fans. The stadium situation is great. You know, the Charlotte area is very good in supporting with the stadium stuff. So I guess, you know, certainly the next teams, I mean, some people are thinking that Portland might be able to put something together. San Antonio might put something together. I think at this stage, again, there's no movement in the National Football League. Everybody's making their $14 billion, and the next move might be to London, which I hope does not happen.
775 says, Brock and Salk had a guest this morning that was a total Debbie Downer on the M's future with the farm system drain. Is there anything to be hopeful for in the future of the organization?
Well, I mean, the hope is now. Try to win now. And the hope is the young players that they brought up. Remember, in that Detroit series, at the end of that Detroit series, Brock and Salk, and I know on Danny, Dave, and Moore, and, you know, even probably Bob Graz and Tom, on all those shows, you know, they were talking about maybe the little bit of the leadership change, where some of the young players are now starting to step up. The Gene Segura's, the Dee Gordon's, you know, the Mitch Hanniger's, you know, those, that's the future. Because if you would go back a couple years when Jerry DePoto took this thing over, I mean, this was like an old team. I think even now is like the fifth or sixth oldest team in the league. But I think some of the young players, the position players they brought in, have done so well. I mean, you know, what he pulls off, Jerry DePoto, if not the best trade, or at least the second best trade, depending on when you watch Randy Johnson, he getting Segura and Haniger for Taiwan Walker. I mean, that trade was absolutely huge. You know, Ketel Marte was also involved with that trade. But, I mean, you know, you get two position players like that, that's where still the future is. Don't write them off yet. But, again, these injuries concern me.
206 wants to know if the Seahawks could be interested in Richie Incognito.
I think they might, you know, kick the tires a little bit, but I don't think they're going to be all in, because I think he'll end up, you know, getting more money than they probably will be willing to pay. That's something that, because again, I think that, you know, he's a Pro Bowl caliber guard. There's no question about it. He is getting a little bit older. But now the thing is, you know, you're looking for the future, right? I mean, you talk about the Mariners in the future, but you want to try to get younger and you want to try to get a little bit better. Sure, he can help in the short term, but what are you going to really get? 1 year? And so now all of a sudden you have an older Dwayne Brown. You have an old Richie Incognito. I think they may kick the tires, but they're not going to buy the car.
I don't know if this stemmed from the moving the Panthers question or what, but the 425 says, if you could relocate Jim Moore, which NFL city would you pick?
Seattle. I don't want to see him move. I mean, it's like, he's too valuable here. He's the go-to guy. You're going to take the go-to guy and say, okay, you're going to go? There's no go to the go-to guy. He stays. Let's put it this way. I'm his David Tepper. We're keeping him in town.
425 says, John, do you think J.D. McKissick still makes the Seahawks roster this year?
I think so, but I think it comes down to a decision, is it C.J. Procise or J.D. McKissick? And, that, I think, depends, one, on the health of C.J. Procise. But, you know, where McKissick is so flexible, I mean, you can put him in the wide receiver room. You can also put him in the running back room, because he can do both. Now, again, I know Procise played wide receiver a little bit at Notre Dame, but I think that, you can't write him out yet. You know, right? I think there's more pressure on Procise than I think McKissick.
509 says, with no running start on kickoffs, did Tyler Lockett just become super dangerous?
I think he does, because I think that, you know, even though what you're looking at is he only maybe get 30 returns a year, and that may spread out a little bit, because, you know, all of a sudden now what might happen is that if they have three returners, they may want to kick to the third returner more than they will Tyler Lockett. But I think that scheme-wise, they can kind of have the guys move around a little bit more just to be able to try to make sure that Tyler gets as much as possible. But I think he can be more because I think, you know, one, he's able to get the ball to the 26.8 yard line on the kickoffs when that happens, or at least on the average. And so I think he can be more dangerous.
509 asks, Professor, which do you prefer, Mission Impossible or James Bond?
That's a tough one. I guess probably Mission Impossible, because you didn't have the number of changes of Bonds. Because, you know, I still favor Sean Connery, with Roger Moore being second. So, but at least with Mission Impossible, I mean, they stayed pretty consistent. I mean, it was the same group through the whole show. So I like the consistency, because there's been a couple Bonds that I did not like.
509 wants to know what you think Rashad Penny's chances are for Rookie of the Year.
I think that he has an outside chance. I mean, again, you know, with so many good running backs, and, you know, we'll see how it goes as far as the quarterbacks. I mean, I think a running back will be the Rookie of the Year. But, you know, again, remember, Saquon Barkley could say, I have a big say in that, because he's one of the best backs to come into the league in years. And if he outrushes, because I think he's going to get more attempts than Penny, then it may favor him. But I think that Penny can be in the mix if he wins a starting job.
All right, that's it for text today, Professor.
Okay, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, coming up next, we check in with Dave Grosby.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Hey, the Mariners hit the road to take on the A's tonight at 7:05. Pre-game coverage gets underway at 6 on 710 ESPN Seattle. And we're going to give a giveaway right now, because, you know, we have tickets for the Felix Hernandez infield grass bobblehead night. You know, the fifth caller goes right now at 206-421-3776. You can win two tickets to this Saturday's Mariner game when the Mariners host the Twins at 7:10, and the first 10,000 fans will receive a free t-shirt featuring speedy center fielder D. Gordon, who went on the injured reserve today, or on the disabled list. Reserve your seats at mariners.com. So give us a call, fifth caller, 206-421-3776, and joining us right now in Dave Grosby. And Dave, again, this team cannot escape the injuries. D. Gordon now down. That means they're down two all-star second basemen. Robinson Cano with the suspension. D. Gordon with the fractured toe. At some point, this is going to catch up.
Well, they can take an example from the Washington Nationals, who've been injury plagued and have rolled right through it. But no, it's just happened, of course. So still absorbing it, but it's a terrible blow for the Mariners.
It really is, because I mean, the one thing that we were able to watch, like in the last week with Cano out, you know, the top of the lineup was really the mainstay in keeping this team a little bit ahead, because, you know, with D. Gordon's speed and, you know, Gene Segura's speed and hitting ability and Haniger doing such a good job, they were able to salvage and get those victories over Detroit and still come out ahead. Now D. Gordon's gone, and so, you know, they're just really patching at second base, and they're thin in the outfield. I mean, they bring up Daniel Vogelbach, but yet they only have three outfielders.
Yeah, and he's being brought up basically to take Nelson Cruz's spot in the lineup, because Cruz has been out as well, and I took that to mean that he's not ready to come back, and he's probably just up for this series against Oakland, but it's about time they put that $11 million they're saving on Robinson Cano to use if they can, because this is definitely a depth issue. I mean, I mentioned the Nationals, and the Nationals brought up a 19-year-old phenom who homered on the first pitch that he saw. The Mariners do not have a farm system like that, so they need to go outside to get that kind of depth, and they're going to have to do it soon.
Yeah, no doubt, and that's the disappointment, because, again, D. Gordon has been so good for this team, and I think it shows you that, I mean, what he's been playing with this injury since May the 9th, you didn't hear much about it. He was still very productive, although his numbers have started to come down, and now they just took it. And this series against Oakland is a big one, because, again, Oakland's now three games above 500, and Mariners are 4-2 against them, and what you don't want to do is have any more slippage, even though the team is eight games above.
Yeah, you first heard it on the 9th, and then really injured it on the 20th. So it was already sore. And you know, I mean, who knows how long he's going to be out with this? He's on the 10-day DL, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, this could be something that could get you for a long, long time. And Oakland, by the way, has won three in a row. They're three games over 500. So yeah, it's a critical point in the season. But injuries are a part of the deal. The Mariners know that as well as anyone, and they're just going to have to plow through somehow.
Yeah,
fortunately that good start, you know, gives them a little bit of latitude.
It does, and that's where, I mean, their ability to have the comebacks and have 12 comeback victories, that has been huge. But you know, now you take away the power of Cruz, just a good eye that Cano has, but now it's almost similar to what the Seahawks have gone through, in the sense that, okay, you start taking all-stars and you start taking Pro Bowl players away, there's going to be a change, and you know, this team has been able to respond in baseball to the change. Now it's, of course, adds to this, and they're getting pretty thin.
Well, you're completely right about that. You know, it's not just losing players. Everyone loses players, but it's losing all-stars. And then in the case of D. Gordon, a guy whose enthusiasm was infectious, had percolated through the entire team. So it's definitely a blow. And, you know, I mean, teams tend to, you know, immediately in the short term pull together a little bit, and we'll see what they can do against Oakland. They're going to need their pitching to get better. But it's definitely a dangerous spot in the season. Now, look, they're only a half game or a game out of the wild card at this point, just 2.5 out of the division. So they can afford to slip a little bit. But this shows the difference of where they are this year versus last year, where at this point, because of the injuries they had, they were already six games under 500. And had they lost anyone else, well, they would have spiraled. Now they're eight games over 500. So like I said, they do have a little bit of latitude. But that's just trying to spin it.
Yeah, but that's just the strange part. Last year, it was the pitchers that got hurt. This year, it's the position players and the pitchers, but more the position players getting hurt. The injury bug just seems to be bothering this team a bunch.
Not just this team. It's all through baseball. You just go through the list. I was, again, reading the story on the Nationals and their slow start, and they got three all-star players who are on the DL right now, and including an all-star pitcher. So you just have to deal with it. I mean, what really hurts the Mariners is their farm system's in the process of being rebuilt, so they don't really have any ready replacements, or many ready replacements is probably the best way to put it, which is why, again, I they got to go out there and try and do something with that money that they have. But it's always difficult because, you know, teams aren't inclined to throw in the towel in May You know, they still want to show their fan base that they're trying, even if it looks hopeless at this point. So it's going to be difficult to find a trade partner. They're going to have to scrounge around for a while, but they definitely need to bring in some new guys.
Yeah, because I think it's been brought up in the last 24 hours, the difficulty of making trades, because they just don't have much to trade. I mean, there's not Ryan Divish brought up the idea they have a good trading relationship with the Padres, but now the Padres aren't pretty much interested in just about most of the players, if not all, the Mariners have in the minor leagues.
Right. I mean, that speaks to the issue of them not having a good farm system. So between a rock and a hard place where they find themselves today.
Mm-hmm. So, big series against Oakland. But
yeah.
I guess all series are big.
I think anytime you're in the division, it's important. And trying to get stuff on the road done is also important. And like I said, the A's aren't the Rangers. The Rangers are the sad sack in the division. The A's are 3 games over .500 with a winning streak going, playing pretty good baseball. So, not really catching them at the right time.
No, that's for sure. And briefly, the Cavs did get the victory last night, so at least this is a home series, it looks like, and now Cavs have to go back on the road to see if they can pull one out in Boston.
Dog playoffs, the NBA playoffs, stark contrast to the NHL playoffs, where you had just a fantastic game last night between Tampa and Washington. Was in doubt until the very end. Washington got an empty net goal to make it 3-0, but it was a terrific game, 1-0 most of the way. Really a perfect game played by Washington. Stars coming through, where Cleveland and both the other series are all double-digit series. I mean, they're just the lack of drama is off the charts. Yet the star power is what's powering it, and the ratings are still pretty good. But, you know, I think it's a little bit more than home field advantage, home court advantage. Cleveland's playing differently than they were in the first two games. And we'll see what Boston can do. But, you know, Cleveland, they kind of know what they can do as well. So they got to get one in Boston, and it'll be critical to get that next one, I think, because you don't want to try and get a game seven.
So what's on Bob Graz and Tom today?
Shannon Dreher will join us to talk a little bit about the loss of D. Gordon, Michael Bradley, his weekly visit, and my friend Steve Karp, who writes for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, covers the Golden Knights, who are waiting to play in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Well, that'll be fantastic. That's Bob Graz and Tom coming up next. I'll be back tomorrow here from the owners' meeting at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.